Definitely need to bring that down. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Stuart Fagan. I represent the appellants in this matter and plaintiffs, Kamika Simmons and her three children. FDR stated that the three B's of public speaking are be brief, be sincere, and be seated. In that spirit, I'd like to address the two issues that I believe that the court made an error on in the underlying matter. And before we do that, we have to really look at where we are. Sometimes when we're on Google or something like that, we're in a map. We're so tightly into the map that we don't really see the big picture. And in this matter, we're dealing with the Fair Housing Act. In 1988, the Fair Housing Act was amended.
Counsel, I'm sorry. Can I just jump to the standard that's
sure.
appropriate here? We've previously said in SoCal Recovery, and we've said that in Du Bois, that the standard under the FHA is an objective, reasonable standard. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. As I said, it's just simply that the plaintiff, or in this situation, the tenant, has to make a request that a reasonable person would understand as a request for an accommodation.
So how is it an error of what instruction was given in this case? How do you argue that it was error here? What exactly are you saying?
What I'm saying, Your Honor, is simply that what the court did is she combined a couple of instructions and pulled over the interactive process instructions and put it in there and effectively made it an affirmative defense that if the defendants subjectively believed they needed additional information, then and the plaintiff didn't give it to them, then they had the right to refuse the accommodation request. That's not the law. That's where Her Honor went wrong. And so, as I said, that under the Fair Housing Act, you make that the request. It's a discriminatory housing practice for a landlord not to make a reasonable accommodation request unless, of course, that there's providing the requested accommodation would constitute an undue financial or administrative burden. We didn't have that.
Counsel, let me ask you about Instruction 13. Do you find that Instruction 13 did align with the substance of the law?
And I apologize. Let me grab that. Your Honor, that ties into the second issue that we had. Yes, I believe that you can either have the actual knowledge or constructive knowledge of the person's disability. That's why when I requested that the additional language be given that used Ninth Circuit approved language, that it should have, the jury needed to know that.
But I just want to confirm with you, counsel, that what was said as to Instruction 13 was a correct statement of the law.
Yes, I believe that it was, Your Honor.
I know, I understand that what you're saying is that's fine, but I wanted these two examples.
correct, Your Honor. Yeah, no problem.
And so is it your then argument that the lack of the two examples is what made Instruction 13 wrong?
That's correct, Your Honor. It's just simply that. As I said, Her Honor felt in the trial court that doing so would really amount to a directed verdict because Ms. Simmons had said something very similar. And so, but without it, if you look at the note that the jury submits, the jury asks, when are they supposed to know? When should they know? Should they know? Really addressing on the actual notice as opposed to constructive notice. Now, if the jury had been given those examples, and that was her question, we'd say, well, clearly, you know, they don't believe that she should have known.
Even if one instruction was maybe not completely correct, aren't we supposed to consider the instructions as a whole and determine whether as a whole, they adequately instructed a jury?
That's correct that you do, but the problem is that we don't have the type of situation where it was in one of the cases in my case was cited that you've got a vague instruction and then a correct instruction. We got a wrong instruction is what we've got, not a vague one. And so that changes everything, because when you tell the jury that that if they subjectively don't believe that they've got enough information to evaluate, and the person, the tenant, then refuses to give it, they're permitted to refuse the accommodation. That's not the law. It said Congress looked at that power dynamic in 1988 and said, look it, you know, they've got the ability to make a request because we want to protect these people who have the disabilities. But we're going to protect the landlords by saying, look, it can't be overly unduly burdensome financially or administrative along those lines or dangerous. You know, we got to look at it. But then you're imposed an affirmative duty to grant reasonable accommodations. And that's what was made here. And so that's why the instruction, as I said, is improper, because it effectively gives the defendants an affirmative defense to say, I asked, she said no.
But you're not talking about instruction 15, right, instead of 13?
No, 13 is the one dealing with the status, can it be actual or constructive.
And the current one you're talking about 15.
Correct. Yeah, okay. Correct. Yeah, I'm talking about 15. The one that,
but if we could just go back to 13, I mean, we would review this for abuse of discretion, right?
That's correct. Correct.
And you don't deny that it's an accurate statement of law, and you just think it would have been more helpful to have extra examples.
Well,
but you know, that happens all the time. I mean, each side wants to kind of gild the lily a bit and have more language, and judges, make their judgment and try to be as objective as possible.
I understand, Your Honor, but we also have a wrong instruction given to this jury. This jury essentially is dealing with a pool. When we look at all, that there's an incorrect statement of law, a pivotal one.
But you're saying now you're 15. You're going to 15.
That's
now.
Correct. Okay. But then when we look at 13, saying that, look at this, we asked for it. It was supported by the law. It was supported by the facts. And clearly there was harm because of the fact the jury's focusing only on the notice. And so in a hearing with, as I said, or let me just take one quick note to see if anything further, because I think we pretty much have covered the issues, Your Honor. And I don't want to belabor that. Unless there's further questions right now, I'd like to just reserve time for rebuttal.
Great, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Whenever you're ready, Mr. Gilmore.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. If it pleases the court, David Gilmore on behalf of the defendants. I will start by saying I haven't really heard anything new from Mr. Fagan with regard to his argument, but I think the issue here is, or his argument kind of begs the question, because of course the initial burden on his part is for his client to establish that she made a request for a reasonable accommodation, all set forth in instruction.
Counsel, I'm sorry, can we jump to the issue of the instruction 15?
Yes, Your Honor.
You agree that the correct standard is the objective standard, is that correct?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Do you agree that the correct standard is the objective standard to determine the landlord should have known about the plaintiff's disability?
Yes, I do, Your Honor.
And then explain to me why you believe that instruction 15 isn't incorrect, an incorrect statement of the law, because as I read it, I want to go to it to be specific. Uh, The portion that concerns me is where it says, if the defendant believes Kimetta Simmons did not provide sufficient information. So that seems to imply a subjective belief. Later on in the same instruction, it indicates in subsection 2 that the disability-related need for the accommodation was not obvious or known to the person considering the request. Again, just smells of subjective belief. So why is that not a misstatement of the law?
Because, Your Honor, I think if you read the instruction as a whole, including
I have counsel. Point out to me where I should be reading.
Yes. Starting, I would believe, on line 11, as I see it, to determine whether the defendants were entitled to seek additional information, you should consider there's five items there. Each one of those five items is an objective determination, not a subjective determination. And the crux of the question here is, did Ms. Simmons actually make a request for accommodation? And if she didn't, if the information that was provided is inadequate, what all this instruction is saying is that if you, then the jury has to make that finding under the first paragraph of 15, that the information was objectively inadequate.
But the statement in the instruction, counsel, the statement in the instruction says, if the defendant believes, that's an incorrect statement of the law. Isn't that accurate?
I don't, Your Honor, I actually don't believe that is an incorrect statement of the law, because the issue that's formed here is, how does my client come to the conclusion?
Isn't it known or should have known?
Well, I believe that the standard is under instruction 14, whenever they provide information that they have a disability and that reasonable accommodation sought is disability related.
Well, counsel, I'm sorry, that's a lot of words, but I'm not sure that's addressing my specific question, which is, isn't that specifically supposed to say if the defendant believed or should have known about this disability? Isn't that what the correct statement of the law should have been?
Well, yes, but that's set forth in instruction number 13, because the knowledge of the applicant's status can be actual or constructive. So objectively, if a request is purportedly made, and that request isn't a request for an accommodation tied to a disability, and my clients get that information, and then the first part of instruction 15 clearly says that that's an objective determination. Known or should have known, actual or constructive is the language that is used. And then it would seem to me that under those circumstances, if you don't have enough information, then you can ask. And again, the jury's advised, here are the objective criteria for you to look at.
Counsel,
I want to follow
up on that. When you said you can ask, is there a requirement for an interactive process here? Does FHA require interactive process?
No, it does not.
So
I think that's clear from talking. If you read the Howard case, it's clear that they say that the interactive process is not required, and it doesn't create a standalone claim, and no standalone claim was made here. So, but it doesn't say that there should be, that there cannot be or should not be an interactive process if inadequate information is provided. So I submit, if you read these instructions as a whole, the trial court had it right that there are objective criteria here to determine whether the reasonable request was made. Not adequate information, then there is an objective set of criteria in instruction number 15.
So I'm trying to understand your argument about this interactive process. You agree that it's not required, but the jury instruction that says the judge told the jurors you should consider, and number 4 is whether it was necessary to engage in the interactive process to resolve the request. So why wasn't that error?
Well, again, because the issue of whether or not there wasn't, in fact, a reasonable accommodation made, and I think that's discussed in the Howard case, especially with references to some information from the Seventh Circuit, for example, where they said they didn't use the term, but if a landlord knows of a tenant's disability but is skeptical of the extent of its effects, it is incumbent on the landlord to ask for more information.
It's interesting you mentioned, counsel, it's interesting you mentioned Howard, because in Howard, I think we explicitly said that the interactive process does not apply to cases brought under the FHA. So, again, going back to Judge Lee's question, could you please answer that? I'm not sure I got your answer.
I thought I answered the question, so apparently I didn't. The issue, let's back up. You have said in Howard that the interactive process is not part of the Housing Act, and it doesn't create a standalone liability. But you have also said in this case, in the Howard case, that it doesn't foreclose the need for such a process in order to make a determination about whether there was, in fact, a reasonable accommodation requested due to a disability from an objective point of view. And I think that the trial court very carefully took that into account to create instructions. Maybe it's a little unfortunate that we use the word believed, but the objective criteria to make sure that the jury understood that you have to make a determination about whether such a request was actually made. And remember, of course, the jury also determined that that request had nothing to do with the fact that the lease was terminated. So it just seems to me that the instructions were correct. Yes, it's not required, but I don't think that that make these jury instructions overall misleading or that there was any error as a result.
Well, weren't the jury so confused that they came back with some questions about when was he supposed to believe?
No, I don't believe so. I think the question that the jury asked was a timing question, mm-hmm. which was but based on the information that was in front of them and the instruction, they had to make a determination as to whether or not objectively a request was made.
I understand your position.
Unless the court has any other questions, I don't really have anything to add other than what's already in the briefing.
Just a quick question. How did we get your email wrong? Was that not updated on your part, or did we get the email wrong?
Your Honor, I don't know the answer to that, but I suspect what happened was I had not been before this court in several years, and I just suspect that it was an old email, and I had not updated it. In addition to that, I didn't get served with any paperwork on this appeal by Mr. Fagan. I think he was relying on the electronic system, and because that was an old email, should have got forwarded to me, but it did not.
Okay. I just wanted to understand. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honor, I think that we've covered all of the issues. With respect to the, I should say, with that notice of appeal and whatnot, that would have been filed, as I said, in the underlying court, which is being served on. So as I said, it's not a case of me trying to hide it from him. I believe the court made a couple of errors. I brought them to this court's issue, and I'd request that the court would reverse it. If there are any further questions you'd like to me to answer, I'm more than happy to.
Great. Thank you. Thank you both.
Okay.
The case is submitted, and we are adjourned.
This court for this session.